Blog Talk Radio.
Space, the final frontier. These are the continuing voyages of the starship Enterprise. Her ongoing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Well, good evening, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Stunt Trek. I'm your host, Uncle Jim. And with me, as usual, we have the Leslie Hoffman. How are you doing tonight, Leslie? Cold up there?
Well, I was doing okay until I went on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's been an amazingly bad week for Star Trek.
Lots going on that we have to talk about. We also have with us the Admiral Ken. How you doing, Ken? How's it out in Albany?
Okay.
Lots
really,
of snow.
I mean, today was a really weird day. It started out at about 6 degrees at about 5:30 and got up to almost 40 by the time the sun went down.
Yeah, it's strange weather. Very strange.
Oh.
But you may have noticed
we were in the minus again.
Oh, wow. That, up in Saranac Lake.
Yeah.
How much snow did you get?
Minus 6 or whatever it was.
Yeah, wow. So you guys may have noticed that we had a different intro this week instead of the Vulcan song that we play every week. And that's because, like, moments, like right before airtime here, before the show started, we got the news that Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, passed away at the age of 79. And I didn't have I couldn't put together an adequate intro to change it that quick. And the only intro I had on file that I thought was fitting for the show was Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock, reading Space, the Final Frontier from Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. So we have a very solemn show tonight. We're going to remember a couple of Star Trek icons tonight. First of all, we're going to talk a little bit about Robert Walker Jr. And Star Trek fans will know him as Charlie from the Charlie X episode of Star Trek, the original series. And the big one that we were going to talk about was DC Fontana, who was one of the groundbreaking writers of Star Trek. In fact, I think, well, we'll talk about her when we get on with the show. I don't want to say too much right now. But then Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo, just passed away. So we have to talk about him as well. So we're not going to be talking too much about Planet of the Apes. Maybe not. But we do have a lot to talk about as far as Star Trek losses tonight. So, you know what, Leslie, let's start off with Robert Walker Jr.
Okay, actually, it's Robert Walker Jr. I don't know if you've ever seen the Alfred Hitchcock Strangers on a Train and the bad guy, the killer. That's Robert Walker Sr. And the two of them look like identical twins. If you were to see the Alfred Hitchcock movie and then watch, the Star Trek episode, it's like at the first time I saw it, I thought I was looking at the same person. Then I found out that, like I say, the Alfred Hitchcock was the father and Charlie X was the son.
You know, Charlie X, if you guys, of course, if you're listening to the show and you don't know who we're talking about, that then you better go watch it. Charlie X was a first season episode of Star Trek, the original series, where they pick up he was 17, 18 years old, maybe, on the show, I want to say,
Well, because he was raised by aliens, he didn't really know anything about women, you know, he'd never had a girlfriend or anything like that, so, you know, he was being a little rough with yeoman ran, and because he didn't know what to do.
And
well, it's like when you're kids and supposedly you love each other, you punch them in the shoulder.
Yeah, and I remember the rumors way, way, way back is that he was raised by the Q, is what I heard. And that's why where he got all his powers from. And it was the Q that came and got him. Now, whether or not that's true, I don't know. But it was rumored that he was raised by the Q, and that's why he had all these incredible powers and abilities. But Charlie X was the name of the episode. I think it was the 9th or 10th episode of the first season of TOS, maybe. Maybe. I could be close.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't go that far, but it's definitely one of the most memorable episodes, or one of the top episodes.
Yeah, it's a classic TOS episode that most people will recognize. And I think besides the fact that the character of Charlie X was portrayed brilliantly, I think that part of the other reason why the character is so memorable, because the episode was written by none other than DC Fontana herself. So that's a good segue here. And I wanted to say about DC Fontana, when Leslie and I did a show, a couple of months ago, The Women of Star Trek, I started the show with DC Fontana. And I started the show with DC Fontana, even though she didn't act on Star Trek. I feel that DC Fontana, maybe even more so than Gene Roddenberry, or at least equal with Gene Roddenberry, the fact that DC Fontana had to hide her name because women weren't really allowed. Well, I don't want to say allowed, but frowned upon at that time in the 60s, working and writing and that type of thing. So she just wrote under the moniker DC because her name was Dorothy. So she used DC Fontana, and when you watch Star Trek, you will see that name show up in the credits quite often. And I think because she was a female writer writing in the 60s under a pseudonym, I think that might be part of the reason why so many of the episodes that were written by her rang and resonated with so many people, because it was a female point of view or a female perspective in a mostly male dominated world at that time. I mean, would you agree with that, Leslie?
Yeah. Well, and to say even that from the 60s, a friend of mine pointed out on Facebook is that, how about Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling? That's a woman.
Right.
I mean, they're still doing it.
Well, they're still doing it, except in the 60s, I think it was a much harder time.
Oh,
definitely for a woman
so,
in the 60s.
But it just as hard for, you know, if a woman is selling, let's say, a horror movie or something like that, you may have a studio or a producer going, well, women don't write horror shows or things like that, which is kind of funny because Frankenstein was also written by a woman.
But I think that a lot of people, Gene Roddenberry definitely created Star Trek, and Gene Roddenberry created the characters, but I'm a firm believer. I think that it's the writers that write these characters and then the actors that bring them to life based on what is written for them to act. And I think that having DC Fontana writing for Star Trek in the 60s was a huge thing for Star Trek. I think it might have been bigger than people realize it was, because her name is on a lot. And I want to get off the Star Trek just for a moment here, because when I was reading over her IMDb page, back in 1976, there was a movie that came out called Logan's Run. And Michael York was in it. Jenny Ogeter was in it. One of my favorite movies. And back in the early 70s, like pre-Star Wars or right at Star Wars, there wasn't a lot. So Logan's Run was Running Silent, but Anyways, Logan's Run hit the theaters, MGM, and they decided to make a TV show of Logan's Run in 1977. DC Fontana was the head staff writer on all 14 episodes of Logan's Run, the TV series, in 1977. TV show that I remember very fondly. She also wrote a couple of episodes of Babylon 5, Buck Rogers, many, many shows. If you look her up, you might be surprised at how many shows that you grew up watching and have fond memories of that she actually worked on, as well as Star Trek, Star Trek The Next Generation. She actually, Gene Roddenberry went to her and had her write Encounter at Farpoint. And she wrote Encounter at Farpoint. And this is something that a lot of people, she wrote Encounter at Farpoint, and then Gene Roddenberry decided it needed to be longer because it was too short, because she wrote it to be an hour long and they decided they wanted to have it be a 2-hour premiere. So then Gene Roddenberry came along and stuck in all this Q stuff. So yeah, DC Fontana, I think, helped mold Star Trek and make it the cultural icon that it is today. Well, I think it was a group effort,
yeah.
But I think DC Fontana was one of the leaders in that role.
Well, I gotta give Gene Roddenberry for being a forward-thinking person that he chose her to. He could see the talent that DC had, and he chose her to be the, you know, his right-hand person. And as you said, is, well, I'll call it, a great boss is somebody who can delegate as opposed to, I'm doing it all myself. And Gene Roddenberry obviously delegated a lot of stuff to DC Fontana, and she was up to it. She was able to do what he wanted and even more.
And also, when I was looking at her page, DC Fontana was heavily involved in Star Trek the Animated Series, which a lot of Star Trek fans consider to be the fourth and fifth seasons of TOS because it was canceled after the third season. But DC Fontana wrote what I, in my opinion, if you've never seen or watched Star Trek the Animated Series, okay, the animation's very clunky 70s style. It's corny and cheesy. But it has the original voices of the original actors, and a lot of the original people from TOS worked on it. But DC Fontana wrote an episode called Yesteryear, which in my opinion is one of the top Star Trek episodes, even of the live action. And that involves the Guardian of Forever, and Spock has to go back in time and fix a fracture in the timeline because he never went through his Kazwan ceremony to become a full-fledged Vulcan. So by not doing that, it alters the future because we get an Andorian first officer on the Enterprise. I think his name was Thran, instead of Mr. Spock. And that one incident actually changes the future of the Federation. So Spock has to go back in the Guardian of Forever, back to Vulcan, and meet his younger self and fix it and make his younger self go through that and complete it so that the future's set right. It's an outstanding episode. We get to meet Aichea, his teddy bear with 6-inch fangs, and Sarek and Amanda. It's a really good episode. And if you've never watched the animated series and you want to check it out and see what it's all about, I highly recommend, if you're going to watch one, watch Yesteryear. DC Fontana hit a home run with that episode. So now, Leslie, did you ever get to work with her on when you were doing Star Trek, or was she not involved by the time you came along?
Well, again, you know, you're talking about producers, executive producers, things like that. Is, you know, we were down on the soundstage, and rarely did producers come down to the soundstage. So, you know, actually, I feel like I met her socially maybe a couple times through Doug Drexler, but but working wise, no, I you know, she wasn't on the sound stage.
I don't know if she, I think she was involved in Deep Space Nine. I think she wrote a couple of episodes for Deep Space Nine.
Well, whoops.
In fact, I think she wrote.
She was the associate producer of Next Generation, 12 episodes. Now, this is really weird because I tried to look up the difference. Is that she did 3 teleplays with Next Generation, 2 stories, and then 1 written episode. So I have a feeling that she wrote 6 episodes for Next Generation, but it's just however somebody put this in IMDb, like say one says teleplay, one says story, one says written. But then you are right, she did go on to Deep Space Nine, and she did Dax.
Right.
The story, the episode name was Dax.
I don't think she did. I don't think she worked on Voyager or Enterprise. I didn't see that on there.
Yeah, I didn't see Voyager, but another interesting thing she did that I saw is she did 3 video games, Star Trek Tactical Assault, Star Trek Legacy, and Star Trek Bridge Commander. Now, I don't play Star Trek games, so you know, I'm just reading these video games off. I've never seen them, but maybe you've played it or something.
No, Ken, have you ever played any of these games that she was involved in?
No, I never, played like computer games when computers first started, but I never really played PC games. Still haven't?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Don't usually have the time for it.
Did she write, she wrote the scripts for the games, or obviously, right?
That's, again, you look at IMDb. Oh, yes. Okay, it is listed on IMDb, writer:, video games. So I would say she was the writer. And it says as Dorothy Fontana. So, well, 2 of them. The other one doesn't say, you know, how she was credited. But so she didn't even, at that point, she didn't even do DC. She did Dorothy. I mean,
well,
that you could say Dorothy.
Then attitudes changed.
Yeah, by that point, she was probably, you know, she didn't have to hide who she was.
Yeah.
She wrote actually some of the really, really good episodes. If you guys look into what she wrote for Star Trek, you might be surprised at what episodes she actually wrote. She wrote Enterprise Incident, which is one of my favorites. I'm looking up now, but she's written, if you sit down and list your favorite Star Trek episodes, I bet you you're going to tag probably 2 or 3 of those in your top 10 episodes that were written by her. Like I said, my favorite is Yesteryear from the animated series.
Yeah. Well, again, she wore many hats. She was, you know, not only did she write them, she was also a script consultant. And a script consultant is one who's given a script that's been written by somebody else. And she's, you know, telling them, well, maybe you should tweak the scene this way or that way. So in other words, she didn't necessarily write the whole episode, but she gave ideas to the original writer. Let's see. I thought there was something else that she did. I lost it. I thought there were three things she did, and I'm missing the third thing. But yeah, I mean, if she didn't write the episode, she was definitely involved in how the episode, well, I say how the storyline should be tweaked. But, you know, let's say Charlie X supposedly punches somebody, and she'd say, well, no, you know, well, let's go on your theory that he's actually part of a Q. Is that, well, you know, a Q wouldn't punch somebody. They would just roll their eyes backwards and make them disappear. You know, so she could have done something like that. That's what a script consultant is.
Yeah, I was very saddened when I heard all the news today. Wow, so much going on. It's a lot to digest, actually, all at one time. But
yeah,
when you talk about Star Trek, you know, everyone goes right to Gene Roddenberry, like you should. But if you're going to talk about Star Trek, you cannot talk about Star Trek and not mention DC Fontana. It's
right.
You can't. I mean, she's a very pivotal. She's right there with Gene Roddenberry. You know, the whole crew. I mean, they worked. You know, they all worked together to bring us this legend. But I think DC Fontana is a different. She's a trailblazer, I think is the word. You know, she opened up the door for women that the door might not have been open for. I think she's like a role model for women. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, much in the same way that Leslie is a trailblazer for women that want to get into stunt work, you know.
Blush.
Right? the Leslie Hoffman. I mean, you know, someone's got to do it first, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But, Ken, did you ever run into DC Fontana at any of those Star Trek conventions that you attended?
No, I didn't. I didn't really start going to conventions until mid to late 80s. Back to Charlie X for just a brief moment. That was actually episode two.
Two.
That was the second episode. That was the second episode. It was not the first episode filmed, but it was the second episode aired.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to the way they aired the original series, it's really wacky the way they did it.
Because the first one they filmed was Where No One Has Gone Before, but that was aired third. The Salt
Right.
our favorite episode, The Salt Monster, was the one that was done first. And then came Charlie X, and then came Where No One Has Gone Before.
Right, which
yeah,
is kind of confusing because the costumes changed. Since they didn't show it in chronological order, you know, it's like the costumes look this way, then the costumes look that way, then the costumes go back to what they looked like originally.
Whoever did continuity in the original series should probably get a medal for having to try to wade through all that.
Yeah, and the characters also changed too because we had Sulu. We had Sulu. And then we had the guy that was in Where No Man Had Gone Before who shows up and dies. And then we're back to Sulu again. So this new character just pops into an episode
right.
and dies.
Well,
I can't remember
Sulu
his name.
Was originally a Sulu was originally a botanist.
Yeah, if I remember correctly,
he was in
Charlie X. Oh, no, in The Salt Vampire, in The Man Trap. Isn't he
right.
down? With the hand, with the monster,
right.
with the red furry hand. I think.
The hand, like the Addams Family, Cleopatra, you know. There was this arm with the tentacles on it, and it didn't like him. He went,
yes, that guy. Yes, that one. But yeah, and then he changes. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. The early episodes, the continuity is crazy because they were aired all bamboozled. But at any rate, C. Fontana will definitely be missed. That's for sure. She was a trailblazer, and she's responsible, I feel, for a lot of the things that make Star Trek what it is today. So DC Fontana will definitely be missed. And we take a moment to remember her. And unfortunately, though, we're not done remembering Star Trek icons, because we lost another one just, you know, like I said, hours before showtime. And that was Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. 79 years old. Now let I know that you had a chance to work with Renee. You must have.
Again, it's really interesting, you know, depending on the storyline. None of my stunts really crossed with Odo. He might have been in the scene somewhere else, but Actually, I can pick when I was doubling the Vedic that committed suicide. I mean, you see the scene where Jake and Jake, Kira, and Odo, and Odo's saying, you know, nothing's going to happen today, and blah, 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 and then all of a sudden you hear the crowd going, oh, look, and then you see the Vedic who says, evil must be opposed. So in a way, I guess you would say that I worked in the scene, except that, you know, they filmed the dialogue in one part and then they set up for the stunt. So I wasn't necessarily standing right next to him.
So you never had an opportunity? You must have run into him on the set or sometime during the filming of Deep Space Nine. So what kind of guy was he? Was he did he keep to
always,
himself?
Always
was he
friendly?
Was he a joker? Was he
sort of a joker? I mean, let's put it, he was not Leslie Nielsen, but always friendly, somewhat of a joker, but again, not Leslie Nielsen with a whoopee cushion. just a really nice guy. I mean, I guess actually Renee's, how do I say it? Is DC is like a Star Trek icon, and I'm so grateful that she existed, that she helped create Star Trek. In other words, I can look at DC Fontana as a Trekkie, as a fan of Star Trek. I look at Rene Auberjonois as, wait a minute, this is a cast member I worked with. We were on the same set and he's gone. I mean, I don't know if you are getting what I'm saying I just drew a blank. Oh, it's like Aaron Eisenberg. I mean, to have him gone, That's scary to me, to know that people that we had lunch together or we worked on the same soundstage and they're gone now. I mean, Aaron was younger than me, but and that's even scarier that Aaron was younger than me. I mean, you know,
no.
It's like.
Was
well,
Rene Auberjonois?
Aaron was 50. Rene is 79. I'm years old. I'm right in between them. If you averaged out my or their age, I'm right in between that, and it just makes you realize how short life is.
Now, was Renee, I didn't hear anything. Was he sick or in the hospital or suffering or anything?
I read it. It said lung cancer.
Okay, the only thing I heard was that it was associated with lung cancer.
Lung cancer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which brings me back to the whole thing that no one is talking about. All the sound stages in Los Angeles still has asbestos in the wall.
That wouldn't surprise me.
They made a deal with the federal government that if they put chicken wire on these asbestos walls, that was good enough. Excuse me? Asbestos is like microscopic. If you were to hit against this wall and the dust comes out, or you don't even have to hit the wall, you're telling me that asbestos dust isn't going to come out?
Yeah, that's nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, but the studios went to the federal government and said, you know, it would bankrupt us to strip out the... It's okay to have a school strip out all this stuff and cost them a fortune, but God forbid that the movie industry should strip out all their sound stages and put in some kind of non-asbestos, material. They can cut a deal.
Well, they probably threw tons of money at them too. That helps.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We talked about this when we were talking about Deep Space Nine actors a couple of shows ago, but I was surprised when I was watching I'm going back to 1976 again. But the 1976 remake of the 1933 classic King Kong, and Rene Auberjonois is in that movie. He's the guy that runs the oil crew that's sent to Skull Island. And when I didn't know it at the time. Well, I knew it at the time, but I didn't know who he was. When I saw him on Star Trek, and I was rewatching King Kong some years later, I said, "Oh my God, that's Odo! He was in King Kong," and I was just like, "That's so cool!" And I guess, he's been in a lot of other stuff that people might recognize besides, you know, King Kong.
Yeah,
I guess that's Space Nine.
He was Benson, or he was the butler on Benson. I mean, so anybody who's a fan of the sitcom Benson remembers him as the wisecracking butler, or the, I don't know what, how you would necessarily describe him, but you know, he, even though he was the butler, he put the rich people in their place.
And he's been in some other stuff too that Ken was telling me about.
Legal. He was in the TV show Boston Legal.
Right. He was Father Mulcahy on the MASH movie, not the MASH television show. For anyone that loves Disney, he was the French chef that was going to cook Sebastian. You know, he talks about stuffing lettuce and doing this and doing that. That's Renee singing that song.
I did not know that.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
Was he in
the
Planet of the Apes?
The guy with the little pencil mustache? That was Renee.
What was he in Planet of the Apes?
No.
No Planet of the Apes connection?
No Planet of the Apes, sorry. I tried looking it up and...
No Planet of the Apes. That's a first. Usually, every time we do a show, we always come up with some Planet of the Apes connection.
Well, we weren't going to mention all the people that have passed away this week, but just to do a Planet of the Apes connection is Sandra Berman, who, again, Doug Drexler is very upset that she died. had her own makeup shop or something, and her, I think it was her first husband, and I forgot his first name, he worked on Planet of the Apes with John Chambers, and we had that whole thing about John Chambers recently, that, you know, John Chambers invented Spock's ears, and then he's the one that actually invented all the prosthetics that the apes wore. And from that point, that's how you got all the prosthetics or all the different aliens on later Star Treks, as opposed to just being in, you know, a big hulky costume, zip up the back, and, you know, there's no facial features. You got a head that just, you know, it's the head of a gorilla, or it's the Gorn, or what, you know.
See,
so,
I knew.
So anyways,
I knew if we dug deep enough, Leslie. I knew if we dug deep enough, we could find some.
So yeah, her first husband worked with John Chambers on Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, see that?
And
I
somehow,
knew it.
Like, say she. Maybe Doug bought, well, either worked with her husband or would buy a lot of the makeup that he needed from her shop or something. But there's definitely a strong connection between Doug Drexler and Sandra Berman.
Now,
or
I was talking with Ken before the show a little bit. When I was started going to conventions like late 80s, early 90s, when Star Trek conventions existed, I remember I went to a convention down in Baltimore, Maryland, and we stayed at a hotel. I'll tell you the story real quick. We always used to stay at the Embassy Suites right across the street from the hotel. We would drive 8.5 hours. We'd cram 9 people in my minivan, which was a Voyager, which we called Beeger, and we'd all pile into V'ger, and we'd wait until after the Arsenio Hall show was over. And we'd pile in the van, and we'd drive all night to get to Baltimore. We would check into the hotel at 7 o'clock. We would take a quick nap. And then around 11, we'd go across the street to the convention. And the reason why we stayed at the Embassy Suites is because they had separate rooms. So anyways, we drive all the way down there. We get to the Embassy Suites. We go to check in. The lady comes down wearing a Mexican outfit with a lei and says, "Can I help you?" I said, "Yeah, Jaeger, we're here to check in." And she says, "Oh, I don't see anything for you." I said, "Yeah, you do. Here's my reservation number." "No, we don't have anything for you." Manager comes down. Come to find out that the All-Star game was in Baltimore at Camden Yards, and the room that I reserved last year, I got at a cheaper rate, and they could have sold the room at full price to somebody from out of town, which they did, and they bumped me. So I called my buddy, Mark B. Lee, who was working at the convention. I said, "Mark, I'm sitting in the parking lot with 8 people in my minivan. We've been driving all night. We have nowhere to sleep, nowhere to go. Can you help me?" Mark says, "Yeah. Let me call up a friend of mine." And he calls up his friend, and he says, "Go to this hotel, go up to the desk, ask for so-and-so, and tell him so-and-so sent you." All right. We did that, and as we were walking into the hotel, all of us to try to crash, who do we bump into? Rene Aubergenois. He was staying at the same hotel that we were staying at by accident, and we drove all night long to get to Baltimore to meet him at the convention, only to meet him in the lobby at the hotel. So
he had a private showing.
There's a little story for you. But unfortunately, though, I have his autograph. I had him sign an Odo figure for me, which I have here. But for the life of me, I'm trying as hard as I can. I can't remember anything about meeting him besides bumping into him in the lobby, which is unfortunate. I can't remember. Did he tell jokes? Was he funny? Was he serious? I can't remember anything about him, unfortunately. So, Ken, did you ever meet Renee at any of the conventions that you attended?
I'm trying to rack my brain because it has been such a long time ago. I don't really remember. No.
My God, we're all getting old and senile.
Well, that's
I remember going with you guys to a convention. I don't know if it was one of the Thanksgiving shows. I remember meeting Terry Farrell at a convention that I was with you, and I'm not sure if it was the Thanksgiving show, but I mean, other than my sister coming to the table, which was like really like, oh, okay, hi, Karen. A lot of that stuff, details about the rest of the convention, like I said, it was just too long ago.
I know. Old age is terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, I'd have to find the pamphlet somewhere. Is that, I went to, it was either the first New York City convention or the second one. So that's like 72 or 73. The only thing that I know that I was there is, like I say, I have the folder that they handed out. I mean, it was a great booklet, it is a great booklet. I still have it. But the only thing that I know that I was there is there's a picture of me with George Takei, and that's about it. I couldn't tell you what other actors were at that convention and who I met. I mean, it was wonderful. Obviously, it was a wonderful experience, and I'm really glad I went, and I have no memory.
I mean, I remember a couple of conventions. For example, when we did our convention in Schenectady, I remember going up in the elevator with Will Wheaton and his brother. But again, I remember the rest of the time being, that was the convention where I was where I did the video room. But basically, I didn't see anything else of that convention. Because it was in the video room all day.
That goes to show you how long ago that was, because we actually had a video room. So, wow.
Yes, we weren't concerned about licenses either.
No, if they want to sue me, come and sue me, But I'm noticing we have a caller on the line here. Let's see who we got here. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Stunt Treks. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight? Hello?
Hello?
Caller? Are you there? I guess I scared another one away, Leslie.
Uh-oh.
It's showing an open line. You might be just afraid to talk. Hello, you can talk. We don't bite. Hello. Okay, well, I guess the caller can just listen in, I guess. If the caller wants to say something, we're here. Yeah. You can just chime in. But we definitely have a caller on the line.
Just leave the mic open, that's all.
Yeah, well, if the caller wants to chime in, you're live. You've got a live mic. Just chime in at any time. So at any rate, I did meet Renee because I have his autograph, and oddly enough, back in those days, autographs were free. You just walked up to the table and signed it, and they'd sign whatever you wanted, and that was it. So I did meet him because I have his autograph, but I just don't remember anything about the – yeah, back in the day, you could get whatever autographs you wanted. You paid you $25 at the door, and then you got your autograph, and that was it. And so, I have a big glass head that I had Marina Sirtis sign, because all I had was this giant glass head. I had her sign it. I mean, when you're not paying, $50, $75, $100, $150 for an autograph, you don't care. So I had Rene Aubergenois sign an Odo Deep Space Nine action figure for me. And they also, this is odd, But back in the day, a lot of times they wouldn't personalize an autograph for you either. No personalizations. It was just, here's my signature. Here's my signature. And I remember Denise Crosby. I was at a convention and Denise Crosby, and they cut the line off. And Denise Crosby, they ran out of time. So they came and said that they weren't going to be signing any more autographs. And Denise Crosby got up and said, oh, no, 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 no. And she, and Denise Crosby walked right up the autograph line and signed every person's autograph that was still waiting in that line so that everyone got an autograph. And that's the way they did it back in the 80s and early 90s. So it wasn't always the way it is today. So,
well, that brings up an interesting question, is that do you feel like the original Star Trek conventions was much more fan friendly, including the guest stars to the fan, and now it's just this business that you punch in on time clock, and then if it gets to be 5 or 6 o'clock or whatever ends, that's the end of it, goodbye? I mean,
well, I have a unique,
feel that?
I have a unique perspective because I can answer that question from two different. I promoted conventions and ran them myself, and I also attended many as a fan. But I think that what happened, and this is just my opinion, in the early days, Star Trek actors were hungry for money, so they would do conventions and that was their income. I mean, William Shatner said, I've heard him say many times that he was living out of the back of a van after Star Trek ended.
Wow.
So conventions was how he made his money. So when you ran into George or Walter or Nichelle or any of them at a convention, they were just happy you were there. And it showed because they would have a sandwich with you. They would take a picture with you. They would da-da-da-da-da. And you'd see them over and over. Now, you got to remember, too, that TOS was the only Star Trek that there was at the time. So you only had these seven actors. So you went to enough conventions and you would get on a first name basis with them and they'd remember you and they'd talk to you and they'd visit with you and it was great. It was very personal. Next Generation came along in the late 80s. It was the same way. The Next Generation people were ecstatic that you were there to see them. Marina Sirtis would come down. They loved you. Oh, there's our caller. He's back. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Hey, what's happening? Paul, what's going on, Paul?
Hey,
we're having a good time. We're having fun. How about you?
Yeah, I'm here to talk at conventions. I used to go to conventions all the time. I went to Valley Forge, up in Valley Forge, you know, down there, music fair. I went down that way. To see Star Trek convention, I went to Cherry Hill. I met Renee there. You know he was an artist, yeah, right?
I've been to a couple of conventions in Cherry Hill and Valley Forge back in the day.
Yeah. Me too. I was down there in the '90s and in the '80s. Down there, and I got hooked on everything there. I was hooked on all these Star Trek stuff. Then I started going to the bigger conventions. Which was called Comic Con. I started going to those conventions. I was there in Philly. You remember them? Remember those conventions?
Oh yeah.
Yep. I met a lot of people. I met a lot of people. You know what I mean? Back then, I remember meeting Renee at a Cherry Hill convention, and he was doing artwork. He was doing some artwork, like pictures, and he drew one for me. I got a little autograph.
That's cool.
He's a nice guy, you know what I mean, in person. But it's a shame he passed on. You know, I mean, he used to be
another. Yeah, it was pretty sad.
He used to be in another comedy show before Benson. It's called Soap. Remember that one?
Oh, Soap. Yes, I remember Soap.
He was in that comedy show, too, by the way. That's another one he was in.
Yeah, I do.
And
I do remember
DC
Soap.
Fontana. And then, yeah, then DC Fontana. I heard about her passing on. She was a good writer, you know what I mean? She was a good writer for Star Trek.
Wrote some good stuff.
A lot of, Then Robert Walker Jr. who played Charlie X. He was a good actor. You know what I mean? The thing about him too.
I know.
All of them passed away. And then my friend Aaron Eisenberg, yeah, he passed away too. They did.
Yeah.
Young, he was younger than I guess he was younger than all of them, I guess, right?
Yeah, he was. You know,
people will be missed.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? They say when your time is up, your time is up. Am I right?
Yep. That's true. There's nothing you can do to stop it. Absolutely. Thanks for hanging out with us, Paul.
What?
It's great to hear from you.
Yeah. And Jim, you both have a
happy
holiday. How you doing, Leslie? You both have a happy holiday, okay?
Yeah, you too. Stay safe.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Okay. And catch you on Facebook. Bye-bye.
Yeah, catch us on Facebook. Thanks for calling. So I think, Leslie, that when Star Trek conventions turned into Comic-Cons, that was after my time. But I think when Star Trek conventions became Comic-Cons, that's when they became less personal. Because the actors were charging for autographs. They were charging for pictures. They had photo ops, and it became a business at that point. And I think that's when it changed. Because back in the early days, they would come.
Right.
Like, I remember one quick story. Will Wheaton. I was planning a convention, and a convention company who shall not be named was really being a thorn in my side. They were stealing all my actors, paying them more money to go somewhere else. I couldn't get any actors. I only had Michael Dorn. And that's only because the guy that ran his fan club was a close personal friend of mine who was attending the convention, who called Michael and said, "Don't cancel this convention. You need to go. He's a friend of mine." And that's how I ended up with Michael Dorn. Well, apparently Michael Dorn was on the set.
Like,
he was talking.
Right. You mean like Creation Entertainment?
Yeah. Like them.
Yeah,
them. And what happened is phone rang. And this is the convention Ken was talking about. My phone rings, and my wife answers it, Karen, and she hands me the phone, and she says, "It's Will Wheaton. He's on the phone. He wants to talk to you." And I was like, "No, it's not Will Wheaton." And Karen hands me the phone, and it was Will Wheaton. And Will Wheaton said he got my name and number from Michael Dorn, and he heard that I was looking for people for my convention, and he wanted to stick it to the man. That was his words. And that he loves to do fan conventions and he won't do their conventions. And that's how I got Will Wheaton. And then my phone rang later and it ended up being Max Karaninchek. And I just kept getting phone calls from actors that wanted to come to a fan convention. So I think the actors know the difference between fan conventions and you know, the big conglomerate conventions too.
The creation that shall not be named, except I named it, you know, they are connected to Paramount and they decide who the big stars are, and anyone else, like if I wanted to go to one of their conventions, I would have to probably pay $700-$800 just to have a table. And well, you know, now we come back to why guest stars, you know, charge for an autograph. I mean, I would have to pay for my airfare, pay for my hotel, pay for my table. I mean, I love being with the fans. Don't get me wrong. I love being with the fans. But I don't have $2,000 or $3,000 or more to put out just to be in Las Vegas and buried somewhere in a back room.
Now, see, back when I was doing the conventions, I would have to pay for the airfare, pay for a limo, pay for the hotel, pay all the expenses. And so by the time, say, Marita Sirtis or Michael Dorn landed in Albany and showed up at my door, they had $15,000 in their pocket. So they were already paid, so they were always going to be friendly and cordial to the fans because that's what I was paying them to do. But conventions have changed. They're totally different now. you go into an autograph room and there could be 50 actors in there and they all want your autograph because that's how they're going to make their money. So, and then if you want a picture, you're going to pay more for that too. So now I think it's a two-sided sword,
Leslie.
Right,
photo op things now.
Yeah, photo ops.
I mean, even from the time I might have done my first convention in the 90s, you know, that I was the guest star as opposed to a Trekkie or a fan there. It's changed tremendously. And I'll tell you, I mean, you got good guests and you got bad guests. There are guests that have basically signed a contract saying that they're going to be there, let's say, all 3 days, and they know Sunday is a slow day that people are leaving or something, or they've already spent their money on autographs. Those guests will leave early, even though they've signed a contract saying that they're going to be there through Sunday. And I think that's absolutely wrong.
I've actually seen that happen before. And I think conventions are different than they used to be. You used to go to a convention and you'd hang out with Will Wheaton or Michael Dorn. You'd have a costume contest and they'd come down. You'd have a band and stuff and they were always there and they were always, you know, would you agree, Ken, with that? They were pretty accessible.
Well, yeah, they understood a lot more than now, obviously. They understood that it's the fans that keep them working.
Right, exactly.
And
if it wasn't for the fans, I wouldn't be at a convention.
Working, that they can't anger the people that are actually putting them there. And I say that, but I also say, I mean, there probably were a lot of people too that just, like, for example, George. George genuinely loved the fans. That's what his motivation was. So I'm sure that there were, you know, some stars that were being genuine when they felt that way. But again, so their motives might have been a little bit screwy, but most of the stars understood that, you know, the fans are what put them there. They wouldn't be at a convention if it wasn't for the people watching the show or watching the movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now it's now, like you said, it's basically, because at least my understanding of it too, is that a lot of these places, the stars have guarantees. So it's sort of like, well, they don't have to sign a single autograph per se, and they'll still get paid. They'll get paid their guarantee.
Right.
Now, granted, they'll make more money if they do, potentially, but, you know, there's no real incentive to be involved in the fans because you get paid no matter what.
See, what I don't like, Leslie, is when you go to a convention, like, for instance, I went to one down in New Jersey, and Christopher Lloyd was there, and Carrie Fisher was there. And what happens is, it's like a domino effect. This is what makes me angry. This is what bothers me. You go there and say, Christopher Lloyd is charging $150 for an autograph. So Carrie Fisher charges $150 for an autograph. And then what ends up happening is all of the other actors in the room, they all adjust their prices according to what the going rate is at that particular convention at that particular time. So William Shatner's autograph goes from 50 to 80 because, well, William Shatner was in the movie with Christopher Lloyd and Christopher Lloyd's getting 150. So, you know, I want 80. And then, well, if Shatner's getting 80, then this one's getting, and then when they all end up changing their prices. So the prices for autographs can change as you're there, which, you know, I've been at conventions where I'd walk by a table and an autograph would be $30. We walk by on Sunday afternoon and now they're 15. And it's like, you know, they I think greed sets in and they just, you know, they want to take the fans for all they can get them for. And that's not right either. But
yeah, well, that's not right.
But at any rate,
I don't know.
Believe it or not.
Like you say, it's become a business. Well, I'll wrap up real quick. It's like that they, you know, if you want to have the guest dinner or if you want to have the guest cocktail, you got to buy an extra ticket. It isn't a one charge to the convention. There's a charge for everything you do at a convention now.
Yeah, when you back in the day, you would pay your $25 or your $35 at the door, and that was it. You went to the convention, but now it's so bad that you even pay for panels. Some conventions charge extra to go to the panel. So now you're paying for the panel, you're paying for the autograph, you're paying for the photo
right.
op, you're paying to get in at the door, and it's just open my wallet and take all of my money from me. Take it all, take
yeah.
everything I have. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like, you know, where's the fandom in it anymore? It's all about the money. How much money can we get out of you? That's what it seems like to me
yeah.
nowadays.
Well,
which
maybe
is sad.
We could just have a like a Robin Curtis, Leslie Hoffman, J.G. Hertzler, you know, all the people that are right here in New York State. Maybe we should just have a small little convention that
exactly
you
like
know you're not flying
days.
People out from Hollywood.
Yeah, it's crazy. The and you know what's funny, Leslie? Just to wrap things up, I remember when I was having trouble with actors, and the first thing I would get a call from their agent. I would never talk with the actor direct, and I'm gonna drop a name here, and that's only because I have inside information on this one, Michael Dorn. When Michael Dorn canceled my convention in 92, I got a phone call from his agent. And his agent says to me, tells me that Michael wants X amount of dollars more to do the convention. And I was like, well, no, we agreed on this amount. And then so his agent says, well, Michael wants that much, so we're going to have to cancel the show. So I immediately call my friend Mark,
yeah,
who's in charge of his schedule, and knows him personally. Mark calls Michael personally, and Mark tells Michael, they say, oh, no, I never said that. So then Mark calls me and says, I just got off the phone with Michael Dorn. And he says, no, that never happened. And to call his manager and tell the manager you to do the show. I call the manager back and tell him what just happened. Come to find out that the agent or manager gets a cut of what the actor makes. So,
oh, right.
The more
they get
money,
10% or 20%. Right.
Right. So if the manager or agent can squeeze an extra $3,000 or $4,000 out of me, that's more money in their pocket. So when the company that shall not be named offers more money to go to another town, the manager jumps all over it because that's more money in their pocket. But Michael Dorn didn't want it. Michael Dorn wanted to come to my convention because that was the convention that where he wanted to go. And the manager was like, nope, go to this one. It pays more money. So that happens. I guess that must happen a lot. I only have knowledge of that one small sliver of an instance, but if it happened that once to me, I'm sure that that kind of stuff was going on all the time with other conventions all over the place, you know?
Yeah.
But I agree. I think conventions have changed. I think everything has changed now, and it's not as much fun. It's not as much spontaneity in conventions as it used to be. Actors don't want to leave the table and mingle with fans because, for, you know, every hour that they're away from that table at $50 or $60 an autograph, you know, that could be $1,000 they lost to walk away from that table. They want
but
to
Jim,
be at that table.
Jim, just to interject, Leslie's idea for bringing people together who live in New York, let's not drop that without really thinking about it. Carefully?
Oh no!
Let's float that. Let's not bury that too far.
Ken, I had a I had a show all set up to do here in Rutland in October, the Rutland Sci-Fi Expo was all set to go. And then the Holiday Inn went out of business. They were shut down by the health board, and I had to cancel everything because we had nowhere to have it. So
yeah.
Anyways,
so, yes. So
we are out of time, guys. I know you find it hard to believe, but we are. We are out of time. So we just want to say in passing to all the great people that we've lost this week and tonight in particular, we're all greatly saddened, and we're going to miss everybody. And I hope that you guys, you know, maybe you want to pull out your old Star Trek VHS tapes or your old Deep Space Nine and just watch a couple episodes in memory of Renee, or pull out Charlie X and watch that and think about DC Fontana. And just take a moment to reflect on all the great things that these actors and these writers have brought into your life, because, you know, without them bringing these characters to life, without the writers giving the character life on the page, we wouldn't have all these things to enjoy. So take a moment to remember these great people that we lost. And we'll be back again with you guys. Same bat time, same bat channel. Don't know what we're going to talk about yet, but it'll be something fun. I'm sure we'll come up with something. I think we were going to talk about Star Trek actors before Star Trek. Wasn't that something we were going to do, Leslie?
Right. Right. Like the original Star Trek people. I mean, all the Westerns that they were on and different movies. Yeah, we were going to go backwards before they got discovered on Star Trek, or before they did Star Trek.
So maybe we'll do that next week, what they did before Star Trek. But keep an eye on the
right.
Leslie Hoffman appreciation. Yep.
Enough memorials. Let's get back to
some
about
fun
nice
stuff.
Things.
So you guys can check out the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. We will have the next show listed there as soon as I get it up and posted. And you guys can say hello there. You can say hello to Leslie over there as well. Make sure you tune in tomorrow night for Comic Corner. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery Aftermath issue number 3 and Star Trek Year 5 issue number 8 on Comic Corner, the Star Trek edition. Presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. And Thursday night on Trek Talkin', we're going to be talking about The Mandalorian, Episode 5, Gunslinger. And we're getting a double shot of short treks on Thursday night, two animated series, Ephraim and Dot and The Girl Who Wrote the Stars. Those are both going to air on Thursday. So we're going to have two short treks and The Mandalorian to talk about on Trek Talkin' and beyond. Thursday night at 7:30. Eastern Standard Time. So, without any further ado, that wraps up another episode of Stunt Trek. Thank you very much, Leslie, for hanging out with us.
Oh, always a pleasure.
And thank you to Ken for chilling with us for this hour plus.
Oh, yeah. Anytime, Joe.
And, of course, thank you to Paul for calling in and talking with us as well. We love hearing from the fans. And everybody, be safe to each other. Be good to each other. And we'll see you all next week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.